let's go ahead and pray. God, you know, it's kind of a humorous look right there of sometimes things around us that seem very simple and somewhat harmless, and yet they have a way of getting control of our lives. And even in the sense that it dictates even our simplest of activities that we can't get away from. And today, God, we're taking a look at what it means to be in bondage, what it means to be in captivity, what it means to be a slave to something that holds us down and brings experiences that you did not design for us, and it actually prevents us from being free. And so, God, I'm asked that as we take a look at this today, that you would reveal yourself to us, that regardless of where we are in our spiritual journey, God, that you would meet us in that place. And we pray these things according to your name and character. Amen. Well, it's great to see you today. We're always excited to see the 10:30 service on here at Cross Point. And today we have a couple people we haven't introduced to you yet. I want to introduce Thomas and Christy McEwen. Give them a warm Cross Point welcome. And Thomas and Christy are our mission partners from Torino, Italy. They traveled over there about a year ago. They were with us a year ago before they left into their home and been traveling and getting some respite and some rest. And we have the privilege of them spending time with us this morning. And so they're gonna kind of share a bit of what's going on in Italy. And throughout the teaching today, they're going to share at different points because I just want you to hear their hearts. When I spend time with these guys, I mean, my heart just, I get excited about what God's doing. We speak the same language. I'll be honest with you. When they came to me and said, hey, would you guys be interested in sponsoring, partnering with us as we go to Italy, I actually, in my mind, was thinking, man, we get requests like this all the time. I mean, you know, there's going to have to be some connection, some reason. We immediately sat down 5 minutes into this conversation. I'm like, these guys represent what Cross Point's all about. And in a matter of 5 minutes, my heart was just bent toward what they're doing and how God's using them. And so welcome, guys. Welcome to the States. It's great to have you here. And Thomas, when we were talking earlier in the week, you know, you said something fascinating. You said, you know, when you first started meeting with people back in the States, you had to have people re-educate you on what it meant to be here in the States. What, unpack that for us. That's kind of fascinating to me. Did you forget what it was like to live here?
Well, it's just that you don't hear everyone speaking in English all at the same time.
Right.
So even though that I speak Italian and I understand it, usually it's the conversation that's in front of me, and you're not hearing all the too much information that is at the table next to you.
Right.
So then re-entering that where you hear every ounce, or as Christy would share about our kids.
The first day we got here, we had to fly into JFK, and then we had to fly out of Newark, so we had to spend the night in a hotel, and it was a pretty ghetto hotel, and it was pretty ethnic, if you will. So I felt like I was kind of still in Italy, but people were all speaking English, but with different accents. But anyway, so I suddenly realized that everyone was understanding me as I was disciplining my kids. Because in Italy, I can say, like, get over here and sit your butt down. You know?
Nobody understands
you, what
right?
I say, because they don't understand me. But I suddenly realized, like, everyone was understanding me as I was disciplining my kids in the elevator. And it was just kind of this awareness. And the second day, you know, it gets more normal.
And have you figured out how to say sit your butt down in Italian yet?
So you can say that here.
Culo.
Uho. All right. So, you know, so you're going to hear from them today. We are going to hear some things that are going on in Italy. We're going to hear about what God's doing here. And just, you're going to get a picture of their hearts and what's going on in their ministry. Before we continue talking here, when you came in this morning, you received a weekly. Go ahead and take that out. And inside is a connection card that looks like this. If you want to take that out, there's a pin near you on the seats if you want to grab that. And if you're a partner or a regular attender, you can go ahead and start filling this out with just your name and the information that's changed. If you're a guest, we just want to say welcome. We're glad that you've chosen to join us today. You spent a little over an hour with us in this place, and we believe, you know, things are said and happened here that you may not experience in any other place in culture, and we get excited about that. And we would invite you to fill this out as well, and with as much information as you're comfortable sharing with us. We'd love to know if it's your first or second time with us. And then there's a question at the bottom that says, how did you hear about Cross Point? We're always intrigued by how people get connected with us here. So you can fill this out and then place it somewhere near you. We'll ask you to refer to it later in our service this morning. As you're doing that, you know, we're in the midst of this series titled Square One. And we're taking a look at the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers. It's known as the Pentateuch to some. In a Jewish culture, if you were in a Jewish home, they would refer to this as the Law or the Torah. And basically what we're seeing is there's virtually nothing else that happens through the rest of the scriptures that isn't based on the foundation that we see in these first five books of the Bible. There's these parallels that happen, what we see in the first five books of the Bible that happen later throughout throughout the scriptures. And so, as we said earlier, whether we understand it or not, we all have these assumptions that we live by. We have these things that are going on around us, and we interpret them certain ways, and it informs how we understand God. It informs how we understand ourselves. It informs us in terms of how we understand our role in God's world and His heart, His dreams. And so, you know, we're in essence saying, you know, well, what if we were to peel back some of those assumptions and go all the way back to the beginning, to square one, and try to rebuild and say, okay, how do we understand this the way God designed it, the way God put it together, and what kind of implications does that have for our lives? And so today we're going to take a look at the second book of the Bible, which is the book of Exodus. And in Exodus, we see this guy by the name of Moses, otherwise known as Charlton Heston. If you've ever watched the Ten Commandments, if you can get that image in your mind, if you'd like. And Moses was kind of like a bondage breaker. I mean, this is one of the realities that we have to see, that because the world was broken, people were in bondage, people were in slavery. And so we're going to take a look at how he led this entire group of people out of slavery, out of bondage. And basically, they go through three phases or three seasons of life. And they're all seasons that you and I can identify with. In fact, what's fascinating is not only are these three phases that the Israelites, this group of people that are in slavery, go through, but like it or not, you and I are in or have been or will be in each of these three phases at different points in our life. And so they have huge implications for us understanding who God is and His role in our lives. And so the first phase that we see in Exodus is called the Egypt phase. And you may want to write these down, because these are, I'm asking you to reflect on these in a bit. And you know, the Egypt phase, what we know is the Israelites, this chosen group of people, hundreds of thousands of people, were slaves in Egypt for over 400 years. In fact, when we think of Egypt, we think of pharaohs, we think of pyramids, right? We think of mummies, we think of those kinds of things. You know, the pyramids were actually built on the backs of slave labor. I mean, those were built on the backs of these Israelite slaves, you know, working anywhere from 18 to 20 hours a day, building bigger and bigger buildings, bigger and bigger structures, bigger and bigger art pieces for this country known as Egypt. And these were slaves, and because they were slaves, that means they were in bondage, they're in captivity. Their lives were not what God designed them to be. And so there comes this point where they're kind of like, we've had enough, we're tired, we need out of this, but we can do nothing ourselves to remove ourselves from this bondage that we're in. And so they begin to cry out to God, and God sends us this guy by the name of Charlton Heston. And he comes and he frees them, and he begins this process of this emancipation movement of freeing them from this slavery, from this bondage. But what's fascinating is the emancipation movement, the freeing, only begins when the people in bondage begin to cry out to God. I mean, it was initiated by them crying out. And as I think about this, I think, you know, you and I, oftentimes we are in the land of Egypt. We're in the land of Egypt where, because of sin, because of the brokenness of our world, because the world's not the way God designed it to be, we are in this land of Egypt where there are things that have control of our lives, that hold us in bondage, that keep us in captivity, that prevent us from living the life that God designed for us. In fact, this is one of those places where we see in the New Testament kind of paralleling these spiritual representations, these spiritual realities we see in the Old Testament. We see them playing out in the New Testament. In fact, take a look at Romans chapter 3. Here's what the Apostle Paul writes. He says, For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So he says, all of us, we've all fallen short of the life that God designed us to live. And as I think about this, I think, you know, even if we think about the core element of selfishness, I mean, there's probably other ways that we're broken or we're separated from God, but when it comes to selfishness, you know, I have this desire to go after my own stuff. I have this desire to do life my way, and in a sense, when I do it my way, that actually causes me to be in bondage, because what I choose actually has implications, and it prevents me from experiencing all that God designed me for. And so there's another characteristic that this land of Egypt is kind of known for, and it's this phrase right here, that this land is characterized as the land of not enough. Maybe you live in the land of not enough every now and then. Maybe you're there right now. Maybe you're in that land where you're saying, man, God, there's got to be more to life than what I'm experiencing. So you go out and try to create for yourself more meaning, more purpose, more fulfillment. And in the end, it doesn't matter what you buy, what you wear, how much you sex it up. In the end, you find out that it doesn't satisfy. Because one of the characteristics of the land of bondage, the Egypt phase, is it's the land of not enough. And we seek after things, but they never satisfy. In fact, when somebody's in slavery, in bondage, you know, there's certain marks that are on their life. There's certain things that we can identify and say, wow, that's an indicator that somebody's being held down. And so at Thomas and Christie, one of the things we know about Torino, when you guys shared with us a year ago, is that this is like the witchcraft capital of Europe, at least, and maybe the world. And you're in an area that's there's less than 2% Christians, born-again followers of Christ. People are pursuing God. And so you're in a culture where people, there's bondage probably all around you. And in fact, people may not even know how they're held down. What does that look like? I mean, as you're interacting, as you've gotten to know the culture, what do you see in Torino that gives evidence to this?
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind, it's totally different than what I shared last service, but it's a very sexual culture. Mm-hmm. And people are, you know, I categorize America as sexual in a different way, but in Italy, soft porn is everywhere. Body image is everything. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thinking of a couple that we know, and they have really tried to fill this void in their hearts with money, with sex, with aesthetic beauty, with treatments, with, I mean, you just, the list goes on because they have, unlike most Italians, they have the money to do these things. Mm-hmm. And I was actually on Facebook last night, and I was, you know, just looking at her pictures because she had put some new pictures up, and I just kept thinking, like, you know, they have everything that money can buy, and yet when I'm in their home, I sense just an emptiness that I can't really explain. And it's not that I don't want to be around them. It's not that we don't feel a connection to them. It's just that there is this emptiness. And I think that is how there's a feeling of that in Torino, of just an emptiness. No matter what you, like you said, you sex it up as, you can put the heels on and the skinny jeans and you can have the perfect body and you can whatever. And that is all around us. But there's still this hole and this emptiness that I sense everywhere.
Much like here, probably.
Much like here, but it's like, what's that word?
Amplified.
Amplified.
Amplified. Yeah. Yeah. That's hard. That's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that there could be a place that has more of that than what we experience here. Yeah.
And it's just interesting because my definition of sin is that we have legitimate needs that need to be met, but we meet them in an illegitimate way. We don't trust that God can fulfill us sexually, holistically, in our friendships. To be interdependent rather than codependent or independent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And God wants to fulfill those things in his timing.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, when I think about what that looks like around here, I mean, I think, what does bondage look like? I mean, it's very similar. It's where we want certain things. We're trying to satisfy. We're trying to fill our lives with things that bring meaning and purpose, but we realize that what we're going after doesn't do it. And in fact, you know, if there's anything that in my life, times where I've been in bondage, when I'm going after something, I'm like, I know I don't want to do this, but I keep doing it, and I can't willfully stop it on my own. I mean, as much as I've tried, I've consulted, I've done all kinds of things to try to lift this bondage or this captivity from my life, and yet there's nothing I can do, whether it's isolation, an affair, addiction, whatever it might be, you know, but I still am left with that sense of there's got to be more, and I don't know how to get out of this. What we see in the Exodus story is in this phase, there's this one who comes, and his name is Moses. And this we see the parallel between Moses and things that happen later in Scripture. And we see that God has sent Jesus to be the bondage breaker. In fact, it's a really fascinating thing. In fact, I heard an African pastor say once that, you know, he's very familiar with the idea of bondage. He said, Jesus is our Moses. When we look at the first five books of the Bible, we see this Moses who comes to rescue. And he says, Jesus is our Moses who comes to rescue us from this bondage. How do you guys see this living out? I mean, how do you see people trying to be their own bondage breaker? I mean, do they realize that, you know, do you see any of evidence of that where people are trying to dig themselves out of the things that weigh them down?
I'm thinking of Lucia, my neighbor, and she is very deep into Buddhism and is one of the teachers there in Torino. And I just see that she's continually trying to do everything on the outside to fill this need on the inside. Mm. And whether it's, you know, healing or taking the right homeopathic medications or having the right relationships, it's like, it's the same kind of feeling when I walk in her home of, you're trying to meet this need, and she's a kind person, very kind-hearted, and I'm seeing God continually draw her close to himself. Excuse me. But, you know, recently she had shared with me right before we left that she is in the midst of an affair. And what I have seen in her life is this whole past year we've been having these amazing conversations about God and about Jesus and how he is the one. He is the one that came to her in this crazy dream that she had. And yet, right when she gets to that point where she realizes that she is in need of something greater than herself, she goes right back to the circle of trying to fulfill it on her own. And it's discouraging to watch, and at the same time, I have to take hope in the fact that God is the one that's drawing her. Mm-hmm. And just like the Israelites went in circles, they eventually got there.
Right,
and my prayer for her is that she will get there without having to go so far down that, you know, that her life is really in shambles. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's just a little example.
Well, you know, it reminds me, there's three types of people that God can't help. When you think of, you know, you say, God's all powerful. God can help anybody. No, there's three kinds of people that when they're in bondage, God is unable to lift them out of where they are. And here's the three. The first is those who, when they're in bondage, they're unable to actually acknowledge that they're in bondage. I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, if we don't know we're in bondage, if we're unwilling to say, man, I need help right here, God really can't help you in that point. With the Israelites, it was only when they realized we are in slavery and we need help. It was only in that moment that God met them exactly where they were. You know, they cried out and said, God, we need you. If we can't acknowledge that, God really can't help. He will not force himself on us. You know, the second kind of people that God cannot help is those who hide their bondage. You know, and we're really good at that. You guys talked about a veneer culture in Italy. Everybody's got a veneer on, a good face. You know, we're good at that in America, too. We put on the church face when we walk in, and we look like everything's okay. Everything's all together, you know. And like that's why we say at Crosswinds, it's a place to kind of get it together. We don't have to have it all together because we're all about being real and authentic because God cannot meet someone who hides their bondage. I mean, if we're not willing to be real and open with where we're being held down, to reveal that to someone else, to share with maybe a friend, a brother, a sister, hey, this is where I'm struggling, there's nothing God can do in that moment until we're willing to acknowledge it and quit hiding it. Third kind of person that God cannot help is those who can't cry out for help. You know, when we cry out for help, God will help us, but he will not force himself on us. And so someone's surprised, thinking, man, that sounds a bit familiar. I mean, I've maybe been in those moments where I'm hiding something even right now. Maybe there's some things under the surface that I've never let anyone know about or some things that, you know, I'm just in denial of. Well, if that sounds familiar, then let me be clear. You're in the land of bondage. You're in the land of Egypt right now. You're in this place where you're trying to do it for yourself. You're saying, if I counsel it this way or if I get it together before I come to God or at least put the face on when I walk into this place, instead of just coming and crying out saying, God, I need your help, there's nothing I can do. And God says, when you do that, I'm going to meet you right in your point of need. In fact, we see this in Mark chapter 10. We see this guy by the name of Bartimaeus, and he's this blind man who was begging on the side of the road. And it was fascinating because he was there day in, day out. He's very persistent. He was asking people for help. He was very open about revealing his need. And one day he heard all of this commotion going on, and he said to the people around, he said, hey, what's going on? What's all the commotion? And they said, oh, this person, Jesus of Nazareth, he's coming our way. And notice what happened here. Notice what Bartimaeus said. He said he began to cry out. He said many rebuked him, and they told him to be quiet. They told Bartimaeus to be quiet, but he shouted out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Because he knew if he could just cry out to where God could hear him, that maybe he could meet him in his point of need. And he said, as soon as Jesus heard him cry out, Son of David, have mercy, Jesus stopped and said, call him to me. So they called to the blind man and said, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and he came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. And he cried out. He said, I've got this problem. I'm not hiding and I'm not standing here acting like I'm not blind. I've got this problem. I have physical needs that I need met. I want to see. He's crying out to Jesus. And Jesus says, go, your faith has healed you. And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. I mean, what's fascinating is Jesus likes to be called upon. I mean, God likes to be called upon. You know, Moses loves to hear us calling for him to help. I mean, there was something about the Israelites calling, saying, hey, help us, where Moses responds and goes to God on their behalf. And this is what Jesus does. When we call to him, he actually meets us in that place, in that land of not enough, in that land of Egypt where we're in bondage. So there's the next phase. The next phase after the land of not enough is known as the wilderness phase. And this is the part of the story where Charlton Heston shows up and he begins to move the people out of this bondage. He begins to take them into this wilderness. And they begin this journey. And in the wilderness phase, it's characterized by this idea of the land of just enough. Now, maybe you're in the land of just enough right now. Maybe you're in that land where God is giving you just enough to eke you through your day. I mean, this was a season where there was something known as manna that the Israelites began to experience. In fact, they began to grumble to Moses. They said, Moses, what are you doing? You delivered us from Egypt. You delivered us from slavery only to bring us out into the wilderness to just die. Why'd you bring us out here to just die? We don't have anything to eat. And so Moses went to God. He called on God on the people's behalf. He said, God, we need some food. And so God began to bring manna, which is bread from heaven. And it was literally this bread that over the evening, overnight, would fall down. It would literally rest on the top of the grass, which sounds really strange, I know. If you read through the story, the book of Exodus, you'll find this manna would rest on the top of the grass like dew. And it would sustain, it would physically provide sustenance for the Israelites for the next day. It was just enough for the next day. Now, what's fascinating is the manna was meant for just that day. But they were kind of like us. They see something they like. They're like, oh, I'm going to hoard this. I'm going to take it. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to put some aside for tomorrow. And they'd wake up the next day, and that which they'd put aside had spoiled overnight. It had maggots all over it because God said it's just enough for today. Something interesting about the wilderness phase is God says it's the land of just enough. Now, what else is interesting about this phase is the wilderness was also known to the Israelites as a land of stagnation. And in fact, the word stagnation actually means moving in circles. All right, so the Israelites in this wilderness, they were moving in circles. In fact, we used to have a dog in our home when I was growing up, and her name was Snowball. She was a Maltese, and she was a purebred Maltese. We get purebreds every now and then because of the cross genetic issues. You know, they have certain medical issues that come up, and she had glaucoma and eventually lost her sight. So about the age of 8 or 9 years old, she lost her sight, and she lived for another 4 years. And it was fascinating. We'd sit on the back porch of my parents' house, and they had this long, like 5 acres behind their house, and she would just walk in circles across the backyard. It'd take her an hour to get 30 yards across the backyard because she couldn't go from point A to point B. She'd just simply walk in circles. You know, we sit and laugh. We thought it was funny. And one day she didn't show up. She didn't come back for like 2 days. My dad looked out and saw this paper like Walmart or this plastic Walmart bag blowing around the backyard. And that was Snowball. She was walking in circles 2 days later. Well, this was what the Israelites were doing. You know, the journey they took from where they were in slavery to the promised land, it was about a 3 to 5 day journey, but it took them 40 years to get there because they were walking in circles. They were in a season of stagnation where they were moving, but they weren't going anywhere. How do you guys see this play out in Italy? I mean, I'm sure, you know, when you think about, you talked about how your friend, I mean, she's walking in circles and trying to fulfill this. How else do you see this play out? I mean, is this a real place? Are there people in this wilderness phase that need God to meet them there?
Well, I think that sometimes we think that it only happens to people who are just finding the journey, but it's just continuous. I mean, God brings different wildernesses, and I think for the church in Italy, they're in a wilderness right now. Out of 2 million people, about the size of Hancock County. Mm-hmm. Is this Hancock?
No. Hamilton. Hancock's just south. Yeah, okay. That's a good illustration, though. We know Hancock.
But just trying to understand the, you know, your county and then a city within the county. 2 million people, 1,500 believers. You know, there's 66 storefront churches. We finally found a church that was willing to partner with us and to see them in a wilderness because people are literally born into evangelical Christianity, something that we take for granted. And believe it or not, that's the direction that the American church is heading. That obviously some people in this room may be part of Crosspoint because they found people that were willing to go across the gulf to realize that maybe we can walk with Jesus. Maybe it's just not those people over there. Mm-hmm. An example of that is that out of 25 men that I know, only one person knows what would be considered an evangelical Christian. And Fabio is my friend, and his Christian friend is Marco. But Marco is so legalistic that to see the gulf that must be crossed, that when Marco meets me for the first time and Fabio was so happy, hey, another Christian, you can connect with him. The first question that he asked me is, what is your take on tattoos and piercings? And I was in a short sleeve shirt and I have a tattoo, and I'm like, really, that's the question that you're going to ask? As there's this gulf, people in our neighborhood are not being engaged with the gospel. That many people know that Jesus died in the Catholic culture, they just don't know why. Well, we're talking about why Jesus died. He died to break our bondage. He came so that we may connect with God. and that slowly we, through connecting with him, will be changed and we will be like him.
Yeah, it's and what's fascinating, you say that we often, it doesn't take a new believer to be in the land of stagnation. We've been there ourselves. You know, here's what it looks like for us. I mean, if you think, am I in the land of stagnation? You have to ask yourself that. Am I in the wilderness? Am I just walking in circles? Well, here's what it looks like. It's those places in our lives where maybe we have this tendency for things to remain the same. Maybe we know something needs to change, but it still remains the same year after year after year. Or maybe we're in that place where, you know, month after month we have the same problem and we complain about it, we talk to our friends about it, but we never really take the steps to say, I am tired of this, I want my life to be different. Or maybe we're in the same position in our workplace and we've been increasingly disgruntled, kind of discontent. You know, we're in the same place in our marriage that we were 3 years ago, 5 years ago. It's broken, there's things that need to be fixed, but we've just been walking in circles. I think there's many of us that are in this land of stagnation that God needs to meet us exactly where we are, because that's what God does. He meets us in the land of stagnation, and he begins to help us take steps forward. You might say, well, how do you do that? What does that look like? Well, I heard an African pastor again, the same pastor that said, Jesus is our Moses. He said, there's some steps we can take. And he said, we live in a culture of much here in the United States of America. But he said, in my culture, we live in a culture where we have very little. And he said, one of the ways we move out of our circles of stagnation is that Jesus teaches us to share out of the very little that we have. He says, we get into this survival mode where whatever resource it might be, if we have very little of it, we think I have to hoard it, I have to keep it. And he says, when we learn to share it, that God actually moves us through the stagnation mode. And so the key is sharing what we have. This is why, as we just went through this crazy journey over the last few months, and many of us participated in that, and we saw that God has this big dream for our next location here at Cross Point. And for many people here at Cross Point, there were commitments made over a three-year period of time, and people in some cases gave over and above their tithe, their giving level. Others said, I'm going to begin giving for the first time, and we've heard really, really cool stories of how God has began to move in their lives. Because our tendency is to say, well, I have very little. God's given me just enough. But God says, if you give out of the little that you have, I'm going to teach you how to move to the next place. That's why volunteering here is really critical for us at Cross Point. It's not just that we want to engage people in roles that serve and bless others. But at the core, we believe that when we give out of our most precious commodity, our time, when we give out of the very little that we have, that we learn to move forward and we don't find ourselves in a place of stagnation. I was reminded of this. I've been in an email dialogue with somebody here from Cross Point for the last couple months, and I met Spencer when he came to Cross Point a couple years ago, and he and his wife were kind of re-pursuing what it means to know God, to follow God, re-engaging in their faith relationship. And immediately as they began to do this, tragedy struck their family, and his wife came down with these terrible migraines. I mean, just so debilitating that she couldn't even get out of bed at times, and had to quit her job. Spencer turned into a caregiver trying to manage his family, care for her. At times, you will see her here. At times, he's just nursing her because this just is consumed her life. And one of his questions was why? I mean, why would this happen? I don't have many answers to that. I don't have a lot of answers to why these kinds of things happen. And yet through this, Spencer and Michelle have continued to grow. They've continued to give. He's continued to care for her. She's continued to be a part of their family as much as she's capable of doing. And one day I met with him over at Puccini's, and we were having lunch, and he just said, man, I feel like, I'm just at this place where I need to move to the next season. And as we're talking through that, I said, man, he said, how do I do that? And I said, Spencer, this sounds crazy. I don't know why I'm going to suggest this to you, but maybe you need to engage and invest in some way in serving people at Cross Point that gives you something where you're investing in something bigger than yourself. Now, serving your spouse is something bigger than yourself. Don't want to underestimate that. But he said, man, where could I do that? And we started kind of exploring. He said, man, I've always wanted to invest in kids, always wanted to mentor kids, always wanted to do like Boy Scouts. And I said, man, maybe upstream, maybe preschool environments in Wombland would be a great place for you to build into kids. And so just last week, as we've had this ongoing dialogue, he emailed me. They'd been going up to a neurosurgeon in Chicago to find out if there's some trial exploratory surgery they could find that they could be a part of that would help maybe address these migraines that Michelle has, because there's no solution to them right now. And he emailed and he said, we're on our way back from Chicago. He said, we met with the neurosurgeon and he says, we're too late for the current study. And so we're being added to other trials that are coming up later this year. He said, it seems our medical journey isn't quite done, but there's always hope of new medical treatments and medicines to try. We'll just have to be patient and wait for another development. And then he immediately shifts the page. And he goes to, I get the opportunity to lead the red group in Upstreet this weekend. And I'm really looking forward to this stabilizing force in my life. He says, seeing how we impact kids' lives by exploring Jesus' role in their lives is a rewarding and an enriching experience. And I appreciate your guidance earlier in this year finding my ideal volunteer opportunity. I thought, man, here's somebody that said, I have very little left to give, and yet in the little that I have, I actually give that. And in some way, I move out of my stagnation. God begins to move me. It's fascinating how this works. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And so as we think about this, God will meet us in this land, in these seasons of stagnation, and he'll give us just enough, and then how we respond will determine whether we continue to move forward. And then we have the next phase, which is probably the most important phase, and this is known as the Canaan phase. This is the land of more than enough. This is the land of the promised land. This is where God says to Moses, you're going to live in houses you haven't built. You're going to harvest out of fields that you haven't planted and plowed. You're going to enjoy vineyards that you haven't nurtured and cultivated. He says, you know, this is a land flowing with milk and honey. This is the place we all want to be. This is that season where all of a sudden we experience the benefit, the blessing of what God has in store for us. And for you guys, I know living on the mission field, when you're in a culture where you're living on the generosity of others and you're trusting for God as the only source of life and energy and sustenance that this comes through. How has that played out for you guys? How have you seen God kind of sustain you and give you more than enough through the last months as you've been in Italy?
Sure. You know, I think it definitely is a humbling journey to be a missionary. And like you said, rely on other people for your sustenance. And so for 8 months, we were without a car, and we had to take the bus everywhere, three kids, grocery shopping, you get the idea, not very fun. But we were abundantly blessed about 3 weeks before we left with a gift that it just came at the perfect time because we were really looking to get a car, and God just kind of put the perfect car in our lap. We got this car, and one of the things that God has really placed on our hearts is to, we kind of say this a lot, is to live a life of inconvenience. And that plays out in all different ways. And oftentimes it means sharing the little that we have. And I want to be perfectly clear that that's not always easy for me. And that this summer, God has really been speaking to my heart about these little nagging questions I have that are sometimes can be like the seeds of bitterness about sharing. And you know, we work on a team, and when you're in community with people, when you're living and working with people on a daily basis, it's messy. It's not easy. And so I think Satan can come in and just really put those seeds of bitterness, and then your flesh can kind of take over and, you know, it just can create just some sin. Mm-hmm. And so we got our car, and we told our team leaders, they didn't have a car. We said, hey, use it for the summer. And we tried to keep our home open, that if other people, our teammates need to come over, or if somebody needs to borrow something, that we try to give out of the little that we have. And I'm not saying that we are perfect at it. I'm not saying, you know, pat us on the back or anything. But I think as we see God supplying so evidently, I mean, I know God has supplied each of your needs in an evident way. But I think as missionaries, it's just a tad more clear because you're literally going, okay, like you're relying on, okay, God, are you going to bring this in at the right time? And so as we do that, it's just made us all the more aware that, you know, this is not ours. These things, these aesthetic things, they're not ours. Our time is not ours. And so, yeah, I think, you know.
I mean, how beautiful a picture is that to say, I need a car, and then immediately when you receive it, you say, I'm going to share it with others. Yeah. I mean, that's the core of what God desires for us when we get to this phase. Let's thank Thomas and Christy for sharing
thank
today.
You
and you guys
so
have got a chance to hear their hearts. I'm going to dismiss them and let them head on down with you guys. You know, we're going to kind of begin to wrap this up, because the danger in this, even when we get to this phase of the land of more than enough, there's a danger right here. And I want to acknowledge the danger, because you know, when we're in this place where we're prosperous and we have everything we need, and we begin to live on that side of God providing more than enough, then we begin to say, you know, God, I can do this on my own, and we forget that it was God that provided. In fact, God repeatedly said to Moses, remember the God who provided for you. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 8. In fact, here's what God repeatedly said to him. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord is your God. And we have this way of forgetting the God when we get to the land of more than enough, and that it's God that is our source. I mean, virtually all of us here today, I mean, we might say, man, I'm in the land of Egypt right now, and I'm in the land of the wilderness phase right now. We may be, but all of us live in the land of Canaan. We live in a culture where there is more than enough. I mean, we don't really know on a physical level what it means to live in a culture with not enough. We live in excess, and yet it's in this culture that we find ourselves oftentimes not having to rely on God. We may have seen God bring us through certain points, bringing us out of Egypt, wandering through circles and bringing us through, and yet we still say, I'm going to rely on my insurance, I'm going to rely on my next pay raise, I'm going to rely on that great job I have, my charisma, my good looks, to bring meaning and value and sustenance to my life. And the danger is that we make everything else our source, and we forget that it's God. It's our source. So let me just close by saying this. You know, I've had friends that I've seen go from Egypt into the wilderness, and I've seen them walk in circles and eventually go to the land of more than enough, and God continue to provide for their needs, and then eventually their priorities begin to get out of whack, and then they compromise, and they begin to put other things before God. And I've seen them go all the way back to square one, all the way back to square one, to the land of Egypt, because these addictions, these other things have taken over priority in their life. In fact, I was there this week. I was meeting with some contemporaries, and I thought I was past this thing, and I was meeting with a team of people that are planting churches, and as I was talking with them, we were having a dialogue, and I began to share some things going on here at Crosspoint and some really cool stuff that's been going on here, all good stuff, but I began to realize this had nothing to do with what we were talking about, and I looked back on that and said, this was Kurt trying to show how good he's been, how much we've done. And I thought, man, I'm in bondage. I'm in slavery to what other people think about me. I thought, man, I thought I'd moved out of that. But God was even shaping me and teaching me and pointing out to me in that moment. So we have these three phases. We have these phases. We have the Egypt phase, the wilderness phase, the Canaan phase. We're all in one of these lands. And so as we wrap up, I want you to take out your connection card that we filled out earlier. And on the back are some next steps. And we're really big on just helping take a next step from wherever we are in our spiritual journey. And on the back here, we have a few different options, depending on where you may be, what bondage you may be in. Some of us may need to just cry out to God and say, God, I need your help. And we've never done that before. We've always hidden our bondage. Maybe others of us, we're just in stagnation, and we need to take some steps to move out of that area. And so as you work through these, take about 20 seconds. Just say, God, what's my next step? What's a step that I want to take? Grab the pen next to you and take a few. Finishing filling those cards out and identifying your next step. You know, we're going to do some things in the next moments that serve as kind of symbolic reminders of this. In fact, Jesus, one of the last things he did with his friends was he shared a meal with them. And it was a meal. It was called the Lord's Supper. You might know it as communion or the Mass or the Eucharist or the Holy Communion. And it was a meal. It was a full-blown meal. It was the far cry from the little thimble of juice or wine that we often receive and the crumb of bread. This was a meal. I mean, this was a full table spread. And unlike us, God is not stingy. I mean, in his abundance, he just blesses abundantly. He gives grace abundantly. And so as we share in this symbol today, I want us to be reminded that this is not a stingy God that we remember. This is a God who gives us everything he has, and it's out of his abundance that we receive. And so on that night, Jesus took the bread from the table, something very common to them, and he said, every time you eat this bread from this day forward, he said, I want you to remember my body, which was broken for you. So he's saying, remember, don't forget that I'm bringing you to this place. And then he picked up the cup on the table, and it was filled with wine, and he said, every time you drink this cup from this day forward, I want you to remember my death and resurrection, that I paid a price, that I went on to a cross, and I gave everything I had so you could get everything that I have. Took all your crap, and I gave you everything, all the blessing that I have. You receive it freely. He said, every time you drink this and you eat this bread, I said, I want you to remember my death and resurrection until you come again. So today, in a few moments, one of the things we're going to do is celebrate this. We're going to remember that God is a God of abundance, and I'm going to invite you to come. If this is where you are, if you can celebrate Jesus as your rescuer, I'm going to ask you to just celebrate and come and eat until you're full. Maybe it's more than one piece of bread. Maybe you just need to stand there and take in some bread for a while. Maybe you need to continue to refill your cup until you're full. Maybe that's a symbolic sign of you just saying, God, I need you to fill me today. And maybe you've never taken this step. Maybe you've never cried out to God. Maybe you've never seen God as your rescuer. If you are in need of that today, maybe this is your step to come to the table and to receive, literally, the symbol of Christ, the symbol of his forgiveness, and say, God, I'm crying out to you. I want to receive. I need you to fill me today. And then as you exit the tables, you know, there's another powerful symbol, and it's the power of prayer. And there may be some of us today that we're just in a bondage, a place of bondage and captivity, and the only thing that can move us is God, through the form of Jesus, breaking those bonds, breaking those chains. And so if you would like us to pray for you today specifically, Pastor Thomas, Pastor Christy are going to be over on this side in front of the banners. I'm going to be on this side. As you exit the tables, if you would like for us to just share a prayer with you and to anoint you with oil as the Scripture commands us to, as a symbol of God's presence in your life, then just stop by, stop right in front of us, and we'll pray for God's presence and that Christ will break the chains of bondage. So I invite you to stand with me and let's pray. God, you are our rescuer. You are our Moses. You're the one who came to redeem and restore and to break the chains of bondage that hold us down. And so, God, in these next moments, as we remember this, as we remember that Jesus is our Moses, that he is the one that you sent to free us, God, may we celebrate that in these moments. God, there may be some of us are here that we've been hiding bondage. We've been hiding things that are holding us down. And this is our first step today in taking a step towards you and crying out and saying, God, I need your help. There's nothing I can do for myself to get out of this situation. And just allow God to meet you there as you eat, as you drink until you're full. We're going to just be reminded that God is a God of abundance. And God, we thank you for this. For it's in your name we pray. We invite you to come as we sing and eat and drink at the